Ladies and gentlemen, you know how I feel about Canada. Well, maybe you don't know how I feel about Canada. So, I was in Canada this week, and that was no mean feat. I was bringing myself and my colleagues in a peculiar form of comedic musical entertainment were bringing themselves across the border to entertain, I guess, some Canadians. You know, we didn't ask for passports at the venue. But I've just been across real borders. You know, I've gone from Italy to Britain. That's a real border. There's even water between them. It's like, you know, you go to the cash machine. You spend about that much time being involved in going from Italy to Britain. Now, those are two countries. They don't speak the same language. They were on opposite sides in World War II. They have separate histories that go back millennia. And to go from one to the other is like, hi, how are you? Nice to see you. Welcome. Now, flash forward a couple weeks, and I'm trying to go from the United States of America to Canada. Two countries so indistinguishable that one of them has to keep insisting, no, we're different. We're a separate country. Because otherwise, all of them could anchor the ABC News. You see what I'm saying? About 45, 48, 49, who was counting, minutes of sitting in this ugly little waiting room, the immigration chamber at Montreal's Dorval Airport. All of us, just a big bunch of folks, waylaid. Don't get excited. I just mean, you know, set aside. And while we're sitting there, about every 5 minutes, regular as clockwork, one of these Canadians in uniform, I don't think they're armed, they're Canadians, but he's wearing a uniform, comes in and starts engaging in friendly chit-chat about our careers. Hey, your show was canceled that while back, huh? You got a new show? So, like, they know who we are. It's like remember the Bob Dole commercial before he was selling Viagra? It was like that. So every time one of these guys, hey, you know, we got a new show. When's your new movie? Well, what's going on in there then? Why are we still sitting here if you know who we are? Oh, the computer's got to, you know, look up your work record. What? They're just rubbing it in that, no, we're not the United States. We're Canada, eh? Yeah, you are. here's my proposal. You know, I never... You know, ladies and gentlemen, it's my policy never to beef without a policy proposal to follow it up. Either drop the pretense that Canada is a separate country because they're not fooling anybody, or Peter Jennings can't anchor the news here anymore. That's it. You pick one or the other. You can't have both, okay? Yep, life is about tough choices when you're listening to Hello, Welcome to the Show.
Rosemary in the bag and tied around my neck for my protection. I'm walking around, big old sack on my back, coming in your direction. What kind of tea do you like? I got it. I'm the medicine man, herb from the land. I'm the herb man, come see me. Oh, I'm the herb man, you all come see me. Me, rosemary, calm your nerves, got peppermint leaf to get rid of my fever. I keep periwinkle to get some love now. Whoa, I got hug me clothes to make my backbone strong. Gold cola tonic for my blood, dandelion for my bone, y'all. I can leave. Keep away flies. Hot lady cayenne for my pressure. Oh, I'm the herb man. Come see me. Oh, I'm the herb man. You all come see me. Get the children out the way now. No, you can't smoke this, sir. This is for salad. Yes, yeah, salad. Herb man, herb, herb man, herb man.
I'm gonna get down. Where'd it come? Line the cup of my mind. Who's the thing in the bullet bomb? Where'd it come? In the lonely bomb. Bullet bomb. Bridge. Oh, I'm the airman. You all come see me. Oh, I'm the airman. You all must see me. Airman. Hot cayenne. Hot lady cayenne. From a blood pressure. Passion flower. Lady Lavender on my pillow make me sleep good at night, and golden seal, chamomile, nutmeg make your breath smell sweet, cassava for your snake bites, Oh, I'm the airman, you all come see me. Oh, I'm the airman, you all must see me. I got it. I got it, I got it. I'm the herb man. What you want? Cayenne. I got pepper, here it is. A dime bag. No, I can't help you. I ain't got that herb. I ain't got that herb. No, I don't have it. And you don't have the cash. I don't have it. And you don't have the cash. I'm Rob, I'm the herb man. Come see me. I'm Rob, I'm the herb man, 125th Street. Musicians too. You have to see me later on tonight. Around the corner. Right on the corner. Come on, come on. Yeah, I got that too. Going down, going down. Your blood pressure. Yeah, it's going down, going down. You wanna sleep good at night. Let's fill my bag up when you mow your lawn, throw the weeds away, y'all. But don't throw them too far away, save them for me. Well, them weeds you talking about is my medicine.
Climb, I gotta find some tenderness. before I get too old. The sun comes from behind and hurts my eyes. It dries my hair so nice. I watch the boiling sea meet the open sky, but my soul still feels like it's ice. A panic at the quiet times, decisions at the door. A panic at the quiet times, fate leads me to much more. At the door, I panic at the quiet times. Fate leads me to much more.
Well, hello, welcome to the show from the edge of America, from home of the homeless. I would like some of that helium that that guy's got, but just blowing my nose, I guess, would be the only real solution to my problem right now. That and the willingness of the Canadians to concede that it's not really a country. But I'll settle for blowing my nose. Ladies and gentlemen, it cost $100 million to provide the security, such as it was, for the G8 summit meeting, the meeting of the seven richest nations in the world, plus Russia. I love that. It's like the old Dixieland band, the Firehouse 5 plus 2. Why wasn't it the Firehouse 7? It's the richest nations in the world plus Russia. Okay, you can come in. They must have known somebody at the door. They must have, Vladimir Putin must have had an in with the doorman. Plus Russia. So it cost $100 million to provide the security that, of course, broke down immediately and resulted in the killing of one demonstrator, who was probably not the best cat in the world in terms of his police record either, but $100 million. You know what you could buy for that? You could buy just to pull something out of recent events, you could put a missile in Hawaii, shoot it up in the air, notify the cats at Vandenberg when it's going, and have them shoot another missile up and shoot it out of the air. You could do that for $100 million, and nobody dies. I watch all these Sunday yak shows, and you see commercials for all these companies saying how easy it is to do e-business these days. Why the hell are these leaders of the seven richest countries in the world, plus Russia, flying anywhere? Why aren't they sitting at home at their computers with their video phones and being the EG8 and put the money into another one of those, I'm going to use air quotes here, tests of missile defense? Meanwhile, the Canadians, I'm on the Canadian subject because I have here, look, right here, it's in the paper, the Gazette from Montreal, where, I must say, maybe it was only because of the comedy festival being in town, they actually didn't punish us for speaking English. Although, the makeup man, the French-Canadian makeup man with the not quite shaky fingers, said, you didn't have such a good time because you're playing to the English crowd. You've played to the French crowd, they go wild. The City of Montreal is asking questions now about I don't know if they have them in where you live. They have them here in Los Angeles and in Southern California, where this broadcast originates. I know they have them, I think, in New York. Those hideous, hideous, hideous things, three hideouses for those of you who are counting, that are vehicles in name only. They're just engines with billboards behind them. And they're driving through traffic just because whoever owns those billboards couldn't rent space on a building. So they just plunk them down in traffic. People, the government of Montreal, Sylvia Leboeuf, Sylvie Leboeuf of Montreal's Economic and Urban Development Department says they seem to be invading our environment. We're not sure that's such a good thing. Reason why? They're very distracting. Distracting? How about it's contributing to the single worst evil in modern American urbanscape? Traffic. Why would anybody feel good about an advertiser whose basic function when you see him is adding to your traffic woes? So it's distracting. We don't want drivers distracted. They're going to be pulling the radios out of your car pretty soon if this keeps up. From Britain, where they're always getting, they're always more civilized than we are. We just have to face it. Schools are now teaching their pupils swear words in an attempt to stop them from using bad language. The same way that they teach us geography in order to keep us from knowing about the world. In a controversial new scheme, children as young as 11 are asked to write down as many swear words as they can think of. Teachers then graphically describe what each one means in the hope that the children will not use them again. Can we planted a mic in the class? No, we didn't. Oh, man. I would love to, though. Here's your next document. Here's your next mockumentary. Parents have said that the plan aimed at 11 to 16-year-olds simply gives children a wider variety of curses to use. The program is part of the Personal, Social, and Health Education module, which was introduced to teach children about growing up. Somebody's got to. You know, you look around and the premise seems to be right now in Western society that if you can prolong childhood as long as possible, because adulthood is just a drag. I'm saying that seems to be the thing. So, of course, what then you have to do is eroticize kids, because otherwise, who are you going to come on to? The course, which is optional for schools at present, will become compulsory this September. It also covers issues such as drugs, smoking, and relationships. Phil Gibson, head of Personal, Social, and Health Education, or PSHE, at a college in Cornwall, says the whole object of the exercise was to get young people to look carefully at their language and see if they really meant to say what they did. A lot of swear words are used without any thought at all. There are a lot of words used that are homophobic, racist, and offensive to women. These can be used so readily that they're in someone's vocabulary as part of their everyday language. You just have to look at television to see how these words are becoming more and more frequently used. A spokeswoman for the Department of Education and Skills, because in Britain, they don't just believe in educating, said it's up to individual schools to decide how to teach the module. A inner-city school will have different needs to that of a rural small school, said the spokeswoman. If a school thinks the children don't know what the swear words mean, and perhaps they should be taught them, that is up to them. The welter of surveys about the election in Florida, studies, continues. And one from MIT and Caltech found that millions of votes were not counted properly all over the country in the 2000 election because of the use of those punch card ballots. The study said most of those votes could be saved and hence counted if the localities involved switched to optical scanners, which alert voters when they're making a mistake. They're counted at the precinct, and if there's an overvote, they say, oops, are you sure? But the study did also say that the second most reliable, and almost as reliable as optical scanners, form of voting is hand-counted paper ballots. So file all those little bits of rhetoric about not wanting to trust hand-counting. Well, we know why they said it. They were Republicans. Hand-counted paper ballots are almost as reliable as optical scanners, far more reliable than punch cards. Book it, baby. Bills, bills, bills. We all got bills. President George Bush's campaign still has not paid the Miami law firm $800,000 it was billed for that firm's help in the Florida election recount. Neither side wants to talk about it. It's really between the client and the firm, says Barry Richard. Remember him, that white-maned, kind of bird-like-faced guy? In particular, I don't want to be talking about it as we get closer to another election. I don't think it's appropriate. Well, you're always going to get closer to another election, Barry. That really doesn't. The Republican National Committee referred inquiries about the outstanding bill to another law firm. Now, how smart has that law firm got to be? Yeah, we'll handle your case about the last law firm that you didn't pay your bill. Wait a minute. A message left there for Attorney Ben Ginsburg was not immediately returned. Says Larry Sabato, a University of Virginia political scientist who's available for a quote on any subject to any medium, quote, I can't ever recall a case of a successful presidential candidate not paying up in full. It's usually the losers who don't pay. The Republican National Committee raised a record $48.6 million in the first half of the year. I still don't know whether the Bush inaugural paid their musicians. I was tipped off that they hadn't for a while. Still waiting confirmation that they have. And speaking of bills, of course, Dick Cheney has asked Congress to shift his $186,000 electricity bill to the Navy. This is the same Dick Cheney who said, well, conservation may be a mark of personal virtue, but it's not going to, solve the energy problem. This is... Cheney was traveling, as that story came out, Cheney was traveling in Pennsylvania to rally support for the administration's energy plan, which calls for everybody sending their electric bills to the Navy. And finally, in the top of the week's news, not making this up, this is from the Associated Press, ladies and gentlemen. This is as true as it can get. I'm not saying how true that is, but this is as true as it can get. Visitors to the Oklahoma City National Memorial can tour a museum documenting the blowing up of Alfred Murrah building before heading to a gift shop to buy stuffed rescue dogs, souvenir T-shirts, and keychains. Workers at the museum gift store say they face a delicate balancing act as they strive to remember the deadly blast but avoid the perception that they're making money off the tragedy. It's a real fine line we walk, says Carrie Watkins, executive director of the center. We're going into uncharted territory. Jogging shorts, pendants, and coffee mugs remind people of those who died in the bombing of the building. Candles embossed with a golden chair are for sale. Chairs at the memorial stand for each of the people killed. Gold bells represent the church chimes played on the anniversary of the bombing. T-shirts with pictures of the memorial's logo. On American soil, fly off the shelves, polished river rocks etched with one word, remember, are hot new items. Teddy bears, similar to ones distributed the Sunday after the bombing when Billy Graham came to the city, are consistently the most popular sellers. Teddy bears. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, the G8, not the EG8, just the G8, plus Russia, are wrapping up their meeting in Geneva amidst the violence. And American President George W. Bush, housed separately from the other leaders, finished his weekend in Geneva by having a conference with Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, while his wife Laura went off shopping and, as she told the New York Times, primarily eating is in Venice. Primarily eating. We had the story last week about the president's father, Herbert Walker Bush, calling a Saudi prince to vouch for his son's earnestness on the issue of the Middle East, telling the Saudi prince that his son's heart is in the right place. It seems gist for grist for the gist of another phone call from 43 to 41 moments from now here on the show.
she saw my new blue jeans and my father was a gambling man down in New Orleans. Now the only thing that a gambler needs is a suitcase and a trunk.
Closer to the wet bar.
Hello.
41? It's 43, calling from Genoa, Italy.
Hey, tell your mother this morning the Sprout's going to call today. She's worried about you, you know, being on that ship all by yourself. All the other leaders in the hotel thought that might make you seem standoffish.
Yeah, well, we're bonding great in the meetings, and you know... Well, you know, night times, I like to check the tube and turn in early. You know, they got a game show here where the girls take off their tops.
Where on the ship?
Italy. It's the weirdest thing. You know, you turn on the TV and see Hooters. Man, what a trip.
So who's that I'm hearing in the background? Demonstrators?
Nah, just some of the Secret Service guys having a party.
Yes, sir, it's demonstrators.
Tragedy that one of them died.
Yeah, I heard about that.
You know, they must have had three or four within range.
Hey,
don't You're a people person. Don't ever lose that. You know, the protesters out there in the streets are, well, they're misguided and murderous lunatics, but they're people, too. Great. Well, you know, those people are making all of us feel like prisoners. You know, I had people in Rayburn State Prison in Denton, Texas, who had more freedom of movement than I got here tonight. Well, I doubt that. Well, it was a figurine of speech, but, you know, if Italian cable wasn't so damn good, I'd be feeling kind of antsy right now. I mean, Laura's out there eating pasta with three kinds of cheeses, and I'm getting room service chili. You know, I'm hearing the boy who felt sorry for himself when he thought he hadn't made skull and bones. Well, something else is eating at you. What is it? Like, you know, I appreciate it when you called the Saudi prince and told him my heart was in the right place on the Middle East deal. Well, I'm glad to do it. The prince is a reasonable fella. He'll come around. You know, interesting story about Prince Bandar. He had a harem.
I know.
But look, I asked you to make that call. Now, I'm over here. I run into the Blair Hound.
Who?
Tony Blair. I call him the Blair Hound.
Yeah.
He tells me you called him. Rocky?
Who's Rocky?
John Chirac. He cracks him up. He says you called him. Told him I had a good grasp of whatever. Okay. And your point? My point is, sir, all due respect, how about you not making those calls unless I ask you to? 41? Hello?
Listening.
Not sure about what I'm hearing.
Listen, 43, you got a little window of opportunity to change the world's prejudices about you. The more predisposed these fellas are toward you before they meet you, less missionary work you have to do.
See, 41, that's what I keep telling you. I value your wisdom on not walking away from the Middle East situation and on a couple of other situations, but I'm not going to fritter away my base by becoming Mr. New World Order.
Sometimes wish you'd make up your mind on which so-called mistake of mine you're not going to repeat.
How about all of them?
You know something, if you weren't president, or if I were Italian, that'd be the end of this conversation right there. But see, you need to hear this. You got your friend, Mr. Putin, signing a friendship treaty with China.
What does that tell you? The friend of my friend is my... Well, he's not my strategic partner. I've made that clear. He's my competitor.
Good. Let Rumsfeld keep feeding you that horse, Pucky, and we'll be looking at a new Cold War look, 43. The problem you've got is not that these fellas think they're better than you. They always think they're better than any American president.
Well, yeah, except Clinton, and then that's just because he was getting more action than they were.
The problem is they're scared of you. They think you're rejecting the world of multilateralism that
you helped build, huh?
Yeah, that's right. If you want to go in a new direction, hey, what we did was right for our time. What you're doing may be right for yours, but if you want to go it alone, at least take some friends with you.
Hey, 41, look at here.
Yeah.
You call who you like, you know. Just give your junior son here a heads up when you do. It just makes me look less clueless when Pooty, Mr. Putin, says, oh, I heard from your dad, and all I can say back to him is, huh? You know, I mean, that feels bad.
That's the point. You look hurt in the eyes of the others. That humanizes you, makes you less scary, part of the plan. So, look here, this is fatherly advice. Just relax. Watch some honkers on TV. You got a big day tomorrow.
All right, sir. I appreciate it. You give my love to Barbara.
Will do. Don't wait so long before coming back up here.
I won't.
Now, you big-legged women, keep your businesses down. You big-legged women, keep your businesses down. You got something down there, make a preacher lay his Bible down. She rides like a bike and screws like a spinning wheel. She
She rides like a bike and screws like a spinning wheel. She rocks and twists and rolls like a vision reel. Tell me, baby, what makes you shiver and shake? And when love me, baby, how come you wiggle like a snake? I know one thing, mama, better keep your dresses down. Big-legged women, you better keep your dresses down. You got something down there, make a bulldog hug a hound.
So it's listener call-in time right now. We'd like to take questions about weekend trips. We have some interesting advice about interesting weekend getaways. Or if you have some fabulous weekend getaways you know about, we're opening the phone lines now for those calls. A little special feature on the show today. We don't usually do this. Line one. Hello, you're on the air.
Am I on the air now?
Yes, sir, you are. Welcome. What's your weekend getaway?
Well, I'm Lyle Condit.
They told me
to hold on for Harry Shearer.
Mark, do you know something? Lyle Condit. Yes. Okay. It's just.
If I may say, yeah. Avalon is amazing.
Interesting.
You feel like you're in like the Mediterranean or something.
Wow.
That's not why I was contacted. Should I just hold on? Or?
No. That's fine. We'll put the weekend getaways thing on.
And by the way, the best brunch on Avalon is Duke's.
There's a Duke's on Avalon?
The silver dollar-sized pancakes. Not the Duke's.
Oh, I see.
Not the good Duke's.
And not the silver dollar.
No.
Uh-huh. All right, Lyle Condit, you say. All right, it's coming up on my computer screen now. No, that's all right. You're a brother of Gary Condit.
I'm the youngest Condit brother, Harry, and...
Wow.
I just thought it was about time somebody spoke up for Gary, and I've just... You know, I'm as riveted as anybody with Fox television. I'm watching it. I kind of kick myself for doing it, but, you know, it's just compelling television.
Yeah.
But then I realized, oh, wow, who? Hold it. It's my brother, you know? And I just thought it was about time that somebody picked up the gauntlet on Gary's behalf. He won't do it himself. The man will not do that.
Yeah, now Lyle,
as you can see.
Lyle, let me just...
You know, he's about the work.
Yeah.
There the gauntlet is, and I feel as his youngest brother, I just feel it's time people knew the real Gary, that's all.
You don't think he has anything to hide, then?
What do you mean?
So, Lyle, let's talk a little bit about you first. You're the youngest Condit brother.
I don't want to turn this about me, Harry, but
I understand.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, do you want to turn it about Gary?
Sure.
Okay.
I just want to support Gary, and I just think it's... I speaking for the family, although no one's asked me, the family's kind of splintered.
Yeah, I noticed the one of your other brothers just got arrested over the weekend.
My brother Daryl Wayne, who has always been a complicated cuss.
Mm-hmm.
They caught him, and I'm sure that's all going to work out fine. He's dyslexic.
Really? That didn't make the papers.
I don't know if they had that on television, but
no.
Now, of course, they do so much with it, but. Wasn't in time for Daryl.
Hmm. So you say that's why he had fake ID?
I don't want to address the particulars.
All right. So let's get back to Gary.
For appointed attorney to do.
All right. Let's get back to Gary. Do you believe that you obviously he's admitted he had a relationship with Chandra Levy. Do you believe that he was guilty of any kind of wrongdoing in connection with her disappearance?
Absolutely not. 1,000% no. I love my brother. I stand behind him. He's a wonderful congressman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the biggest crime my brother, Gary Condit, ever committed was not being supportive of my decision to go into show business.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Hold on. What do you do in show business?
At the moment I'm appearing at the Roy and Heather Stein's Almost a Legend show at the Rabbit's Foot Lounge out here in Bakersfield. I play Bobby Darin in the Almost Legend show out here. And
Almost Legend.
Well, we can't use the legends.
Oh, I see, for copyright.
So they're just kind of like the almost, then legends in big letters.
I see, yeah.
The almost, you can't really, almost the, you can hardly see it.
I see.
You think
you're seeing the legends.
Right.
And you play.
And we're every bit is darn good, I'll tell you that.
Now you play, you say Bobby Darin?
Bobby Darin and Harry, I don't want to turn this into a plug for the show, although we're located right by the Hyundai plant, right on the 5, you
uh-huh.
know?
Yeah.
And
I don't particularly know where that is, but all right.
Well, you just call. Phone works both ways, you know.
Okay. Sounds like a good weekend getaway of its own.
Hey, there you go.
See?
I guess we are on topic.
Yeah. Do you do Mac the Knife?
Sure, Harry. I do Somewhere Across the Sea, Somewhere mm-hmm. Waiting for Me. I do all that. But here's the fun thing. Here's the hoot of it, really, Harry. I also do some dialogue from some of Bobby's movies.
What movies?
Well, the movie, you remember that one he was, the movie he did with Sidney Poitier where... You know, not just State Fair and all that, but that one where, you know, Sidney Poitier played the doctor and Bobby was kind of a racist. See if you remember this. I don't care if you are a doctor. You're still a colored boy to me. Then I'll go right into Mac the Knife.
Wow, you're bringing it all back to me. Yeah. Do you do Splish Splash?
Absolutely.
Yeah. You close with that.
Dream Lover, I do.
Do you close
Dream
with...
Dream Lover. But
do you close with Splish Splash?
It depends.
Oh.
It depends how many people are there.
Yeah.
Because I have nodules.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And that's like there's notes there that my Aunt Sadie couldn't hit.
Has Gary confided? I want to get back to your brother. Has Gary confided in you at all about? Hello.
What?
Yeah. Has Gary confided in you at all about his?
There's nothing to confide in, Harry. This is listen. I don't condone what Gary did vis-a-vis the intern. I happen to believe that marriage is a sacred bond, and that's between him and his lovely wife, my sister-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
But so I don't want to condone that. I certainly don't think he had anything to do with her disappearance. We haven't talked for some time, but I know that if we did, we're on speaking terms. He'd absolutely say, "Hey, Lyle. This is me. You know me.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I would never." And I would say, "Of course you would never." And
right.
He would say, "You know, if we were still speaking, mm-hmm. No, this is crazy. I'm just, you know." And I would say, "Yes, don't even finish that.
Mm-hmm.
I know."
Mm-hmm.
And I'd give him kind of a hug in thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, not an actual hug.
Well, I was there, of course.
I see. Now, if you were on speaking terms, what would he tell you about the lie detector test?
He took a lie detector test, Harry.
Yeah, I know that. But I'm saying, if you were on speaking terms, what do you think he would tell you about that?
If I were on speaking terms, mm-hmm. my brother and I, not saying that I'm not, I'm just saying that, you know, with the go-go show business thing
mm-hmm.
and the hours, you know,
yeah.
I'm going to bed when he's getting up to be a congressman.
What's your latest show in Bakersfield?
Well, I'm doing the Legends show now.
No, I mean late in terms of the evening.
Oh, we do 7 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. 11:40, 1 o'clock, 1:20, and at 2 a.m. and at 2:10, which is a really abbreviated, truncated kind of a tab show on the weekends.
That's
for the kids in the other shows who can't get by to see us during the week can just catch 10 minutes of the show.
Yeah, what other shows are there in Bakersfield?
Oh gosh, we got some wonderful dinner theater out there, Harry. You should take a little drive out. Talk about a wonderful vacation destination.
Oh, well, so
the
we're
Burl
on.
The Live Theater, where Joanne Worley is doing an all-female Bent.
Bent?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's about the gay folks who were in the concentration camps.
Ah.
And, you know, Joanne has kind of, in a way, it's hurt her comedy genius. But when you see her in this, you're going to think, oh, my God.
Hmm.
Had no idea the Nazis were this bad.
Wow. So, now you mentioned getting away from show business for a moment. You said that
just for a moment.
Yeah. You think that marriage is a sacred bond.
Absolutely.
Are you, okay. Are you, Mr. Condit, are you married yourself?
Well, I'm a two-time loser on that score, Harry.
Ah.
I married the same woman twice.
Really?
three times, actually, if you count when we renewed our vows. Well, actually, we renewed our vows two times. That's four times, really.
Well, do you mind if I ask why all the coming and going, so to speak?
Well, you know, I married very young, and then not so young, and then alcohol played, as it often does, played a terrible part in it.
Hmm.
Cute story, though. The fellow who plays is a Liberace impersonator in our show at the Rabbit's Foot is also an ordained minister. So he married us each and every one of those times.
So you've been married by the Liberace of Almost Legends.
Yeah.
Who is there a George Liberace in Almost Legends, or do they not bother with
him? Oh, people barely remember Liberace.
Yeah, yeah, that's the tragedy.
George Liberace, that's for our, you know, you and me, we remember him.
What do you think of all the media fuss about your brother? Do you think that the people are picking on him now that because of the relationship with the intern that it's unfair, or do you think what do you think?
Well, I just wish some of the attention he's getting now he might have gotten when he was trying to get that underground crosswalk for us out in California in his district.
I see what you're saying.
Or maybe
yeah.
just that. Maybe just to get some of that malathion spray for the
med flow.
Growers
out
there.
Yeah, yeah.
Where were they then?
Yeah,
interesting. Now, oh yeah,
yes.
You know, cameras. And I'm not saying that this isn't. You know, I understand that there's a girl missing, and it's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But I and
did
whatever
you ever...
happened, is I feel for the family.
Yeah. Well, I think we all do.
We you have to, Harry. Yeah. You have to. I mean, if I see that kitchen one more time, you know,
yeah.
Their house, their kitchen.
Did you
just? So sad.
Did you ever meet Sean?
Yeah, and her being gone as well, but the kitchen.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. Did you ever meet?
White, it's just, you know, I mean, which is neither here nor there, but it just adds to the kind of the starkness of it and the tragedy, and hopefully she'll come home fine, which is what we all want.
Did you ever meet Chandra Levy?
Never met her, and never really spoke to Gary about her. But I'll tell you this, and I mean this, if knowing my brother as I do and the kind of people person he is, she must be a wonderful person.
Hmm. Interesting.
Now you got the waterworks going here a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Getting a little misty now.
I'm sorry. So how did you decide to focus on Bobby Darin?
I feel like, in a way, I've always loved Bobby Darin. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. I feel that, in a way, there are nights I feel that Bobby's channeling me, and that coupled with the producers of the show saying just the Bobby Darin guy had some problems with child custody payments or whatever, which is a whole other...
So there was an opening.
And so I fit the costume, basically.
I see. Do you do If I Were a Carpenter?
Yeah, that's when the 60s were a time of change. Bobby sensed that change, and that's when, you know, I put the denim jacket on and take off a hairpiece with a balding piece under that, because actually I wish I, you know, here's the real tragedy. Gary got the good genes for the hair. I have kind of a weave.
Huh, he sure did. But so
yes, he did.
That must be hot.
I hate him, you know, I hate him. I have the weave.
Yeah, that must be hot to wear two pieces.
It's darn hot, especially when you're wearing a... You know, gotta wear the bald piece and then the toupee on top
of
the
hat.
Because at some point Bobby ages.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm only on for like 18 minutes.
Wow.
So, I take Bobby right through, and then I take him through the frozen heart surgery where we finally lost him.
So the room must be thoroughly air conditioned. I mean, Bakersfield is pretty.
I thought you were going to say the room must be not a dry eye in the house.
Well, yeah, I left that for you to say. But I mean, I'm just thinking about you sweating while you're up there.
Oh, I'm schwitzing, as they say here in show business area. But, you know, I don't even notice it. I come off completely drenched.
Yeah, I can imagine. And then do you shower between shows or just?
I have a kid who throws me a towel.
Mm.
And then I just, you know, I do TM, and then I'm back on there.
We're talking to Lyle Condit, who is the third brother. Third brother? Are there more brothers?
There's four of us all together.
Wow.
There's Burl, my brother, who's a police officer.
Uh-huh.
There's Daryl, of course.
Who's in trouble right now?
And Gary.
And Gary, who's in trouble right now?
Daryl's a little bit of trouble. Gary's in a lot of trouble, but that's going to work out just fine. I know it, and he's going to just get right back into getting us right back to the pork barrel, as I always tease him.
Right back to that underground crosswalk.
There you go.
So, Lyle, If Gary were listening to this broadcast right now, and I don't know if he is, but we're on the air in Washington, so he may be, what would you say to him?
I'd say call Mom. Mm. I'd say, Gary, whatever she did or didn't do or was there or not there for you, call her. Don't punish her because of her problem. When she, you know, our mother was, this is before everybody was with the sensitive, with the mother, the sensitive mother, you know?
Yeah.
Call Mom. Mm. You mean about the Chandra thing?
Well, whatever. I just left it kind of open for you there.
Huh? I'd say, Gary, you stick to your guns. You don't want to talk to the press. You know what you didn't do. They should just find out what you didn't do. That's up to them. You go. You take care of business. TCB, my friend.
Okay.
And that's what I would say.
All right.
That's what I would say to
you. All right, Lyle, and let me ask you one more question. If Bobby Darin...
Oh.
We're speaking to Gary Condit right now. What would he say?
He'd say, Bobby. He would say, gee, you caught me, Harry, because
I'm sorry.
It's so scripted.
I see.
But I do on stage.
Yeah. Yeah, and probably,
I'm really not one of those, you know, what is this? Whose line is it anyway, all of a sudden?
Yeah, I you probably don't feel in the character.
Got me there with that.
Unless you get the piece on, right?
Yeah, you know, you gotta like, you know, it's like you gotta get the uniform on before you can play the game.
All right, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to throw you a curve there, Lyle Condit. I appreciate you calling up and sharing your insight into this roaring national news story with us.
It is. It's just every second.
Yeah.
Cute story, and vis-a-vis nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you know, the press will go to town with a story like this, and it's not why I say it. It's to say the kind of relationship and the kind of kid that I knew growing up, my older brother, my big brother, the one I could count on.
Yeah.
Gary buried me once in our yard, you know. Kids will do that. You'll bury your brother.
Oh,
I mean, when you're a kid, you'll just bury your brother.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
How old was he when he did this?
Oh, 14.
That's
I'm 7 years younger. And the dog found me.
Yeah.
Luckily.
Yeah.
But it was fun. It was good fun. It's like now, right away, the press got all, killer. You know what I mean? Bad guy. No. Interesting thing. I can't even have a blanket on me when I sleep. You know what I mean?
Because of that day.
Very warm room.
Yeah. What kind of place did you live in where you had sand in the yard? Were you at the beach?
No, eastern Oklahoma.
Oh.
It wasn't really sand. It was kind of horrible, smelly clay.
And how long...
Mary, in terms of just one quick second, this Afro-American fella, landscaper, minister...
Oh, yeah, the minister who claimed that Gary Condit had an affair with his daughter, the minister's daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
Also a minister and slash landscaper.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, people are asking about that. Let me ask the people who are asking that a question. And listen, I'll ask you, okay, Harry?
Okay, fine.
Because you're in the media.
Sure.
Okay?
Barely.
You don't know how I could get a Spec Moesha script... to the producers of that show, do you?
Apropos of the African...
No, apropos of just nothing, just apropos of...
I don't know, I think...
Apropos of my making a living.
I see. I think Moesha has been canceled.
Has it really?
Yeah.
Because it was a cute story where Moesha accidentally pastes her food stamps on a fan letter to Peebo Bryson. And she thinks, and it's Christmas, and there's no Christmas dinner. All of a sudden, act break.
Yeah.
Peebo Bryson shows up with a turkey. Peebo Bryson!
Wow.
Applause, applause. You know, one of those.
Yeah, that's Well, look, you're on the air, so if they...
it's out there in the ether now, huh?
Yeah, if they're still in production, you know, say your name again.
If Frazier can use it, I don't know.
Say your name again and say it's copyrighted by you.
Lyle Condit.
Okay. Lyle, I can't thank you enough for...
Well, Harry, listen, I can't thank you enough for letting me try to set the record straight for my brother, and it's nice that the nice things get heard a little bit.
Yeah.
That's all I'm about.
Now, do you want to return to your privacy at this point, or would you like to get on Larry King?
Hey, you know, I wouldn't mind my 15 minutes of fame.
Okay, well, we'll see what we can do.
Well, you've been marvelous.
Lyle Condit.
I'm serious. Try Avalon.
Okay, but as far as Showtime, when's your next show?
Oh, it should be half hour any time.
Okay.
I'm the one who, you know, this is so low budget out here. I'm my own equity deputy. I have to knock on the door and go, 5 minutes, but it's me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Lyle Condit, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And good luck with the show.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Sometimes you just have to make some news. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at this same time. Imagine that. On these same stations. Imagine that. On NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the Armed Forces Network on shortwave at WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer whenever you want it at two different locations, www.kcrw.com and www.harryshearer.com. And it would be just like Gary Conant having another brother if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. My thanks to Lloyd Grove of the Washington Post for some nice ink this week. On today's broadcast, the part of Lyle Condit was played by Tom Leopold. A note to our Bay Area listeners, if you'd like to see kind of an advanced screening of Teddy Bear's Picnic, my feature film about a place very much like Bohemian Grove, it'll be playing August 4th at the Wine Country Film Festival. So make your travel plans now, or just come down to Avalon. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. You think I blew my chances for syndication in Canada? Yeah, I do too. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.